The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And all our wonderful listeners. Somebody else there.
I thought you were going to say, and like the dogs are in the cars.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah,
no.
That's
against the law.
We don't want animal control.
We would never do that.
We'd never
put our dogs in the
windows rolled down and the sunroof open.
Never.
Mm-mm. All right, let's see. My sound is on too loud there. It's making my ears bleed just a little bit.
Was it?
Yeah. Forgot to check that before we got started. Hey, so today... Well, let's see. Should I do the homework or today?
Oh, you should do the homework. Let's get that out of the way.
How about both? So today we have some current information for you. We usually have current information, but we have really current information, and it's all about the our favorite people, the Department of the Interior. And for those of you who don't follow government bureaucracy, the Bureau of Reclamation is part of the Department of the Interior. And if you haven't been to the Department of the Interior building in Sacramento, you've missed a lot and probably kept all your clothes on, too. Because I got to tell you, it was just like the airport. I had to take my watch off. Like, really? My watch? I think I can get my watch through the metal detector at the airport. Anyway, we are here with, well, not in real life, on the phone anyway, with Lawrence Kogan, who is the principal of the Kogan Law Group, president and CEO of the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. The good kind of sustainable development, not the bad kind. Just in case people just...
Is there a good kind?
Just in case people just turn their radios off.
Sustainable. I'm not sure. I'm going to need a little explanation
just,
on
just
that.
Just in case they thought we'd gone to the dark side.
I get whacked every time I say sustainable.
Larry, why'd you call it that?
Why? Because what we try to do was to... persuade those on the liberal green sustainable development bandwagon that we were part of their camp.
Ah,
and so
psychology.
We were being sneaky.
Yes, in that case, we're very sustainable.
In that case, the sneakiness has ended.
It sustained us for a while.
You were able to slide in undetected.
Yes, and since we're a 501c3, we can enter in to all these UN venues and look as legitimate as any of the other illegitimate liberal groups.
Yeah. Well, that's fun. That's a good answer. I keep meaning to ask you that. And you were on with us because I had read an article from that organization that you had written, oh my gosh, like a year and a half ago. And then here we all are, fast forward to the joyride with the Klamath Basin. And for those folks on the East Coast that are listening, I guess I should point this out. On Sundays, we air live from noon to 2 Pacific time here in far, far northern California, far away from Hollywood, far away from the fruits and nuts, far away from all that insanity.
Fruits and nuts, could you define that a little more?
No.
Okay.
They already had the newsflash this morning was all in the bathroom bill, so I think they're covering that nationwide, actually. Yeah, okay. I think that's handled.
All the fruits and nuts I can take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And coming to a restroom near you. And then on Mondays, we air East Coast time from 2 to 3 on the Conservative Commandos Network, and they broadcast on WNJC 1360 AM. We aired like three different times last week, so we were popping into their rotation lots of different times, and they're airing the whole two-hour show. He just needed the hour, so we only have our first hour back east from 2 to 3. So the rest of the time, you can catch us at wethepeopleradio.us, and by this afternoon, we will have a commercial-free archive up. Hope you'll send it around and let your friends listen to it, and if the commercials drive you nuts, wait till the commercial-free archive comes out and listen. Found out yesterday, I did a little hunting through the who's listening from where.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, we have a whole boatload of people listening from the Ukraine.
Yeah, some foreigners.
We had 150 people in the Ukraine last month, just in the last like 3.5 weeks, listening in the Ukraine.
Hmm. That's because probably my name harkens from that region of the world.
Oh.
Ethnically, my name somehow pops up in Belarusia.
Oh, that's interesting. Then we had some Canadians, some Chinese. We had really a bizarre smattering. I always like it when they listen through the website, because then I can see where they are. I can't see who they are. Well, I'm not the NSA, but I can see where they are.
Aaron, these same people visit the ITSSD website. Most of our visitorship actually comes from Beijing.
Really?
Yeah, Beijing, Ukraine, Belarusia, Russia.
Uh-huh. We had a hunk from Africa, too. That was somewhat inexplicable. Yeah. Canada was, you know, we've had lots of guests on from Canada. Anyway, just a little side note.
Well, Beijing listens so they can get a breath of fresh air.
Exactly.
the Klamath region's got a lot more fresh air than Beijing.
Exactly. And for those people who can't listen by computer or would like to have somebody else tune in, I know Conservative Commandos, I know their network has lots of good shows, and they air that on a loop all the time. So you can pull the shows up whenever, but you can call a phone number. It's 832-999-1199. I'll give that to you again in a little bit. So if you have somebody who says, oh, I'd like to listen, but I can't, if they want to listen from either noon to 2 on Sundays here, they can catch us online. But if they need to use the telephone, listen Mondays 2 to 3 East Coast time on 832-999-1199. Kind of useful.
Yeah.
All right. So, now, speeding on, Larry, talk to us about what, I don't even know where we want to go today. I don't know how we want to do it. So we'll just follow along. How do you want to lay this out?
Well, I think there was a recent news report. There have been news reports in the last several weeks concerning the effect of the signing of several basin agreements affecting water use in the Klamath Basin. And there have been several articles talking about the need to replace part of the Klamath Irrigation Project, particularly that part operating within the Klamath Irrigation District, which, as you know, I'm legal representative to. And these issues would appear to be separate and distinct issues, but they're actually quite linked because of the Bureau of Reclamation's efforts to ensure that the basin agreements actually are implemented and that there's very little resistance to that implementation.
And, of course, those agreements are totally in the best interest of the irrigators. Is that correct?
Well, the Bureau of Reclamation, obviously, you know, is the Mid-Pacific Regional Office is based in Sacramento. And that office obviously has its own agenda for purposes of fulfillment in the region, but it also does follow the instructions of, you know, of the Bureau of Reclamation headquarters in Washington, D.C., which, as you know, is a part of the Secretary of Interior's office. It's an agency within the Interior Department, and the Interior Department, as you know, is run by the infamous Sally Jewell. Before that, Ken Salazar. And as a member of the cabinet to the White House, the Interior Secretary is instructed to follow White House agenda. So if you track it all the way upstairs, you can see the connections between what the White House wants to happen out in the Pacific Northwest and how the Sacramento BOR office is or is not implementing those wishes. The basin agreements, we believe, is part of a White House agenda out west, which is also occurring in other states like Montana, where I have clients, that is seeking to curtail water use in agriculture for the sake of environmental interests and tribal water rights. And the Klamath Project is one of the largest projects for irrigation in the country. So it is a ground zero of initiatives, including these basin agreements, which have been in the works for now almost 15, 20 years in some form.
Yeah, and why, so for people who are thinking, well, why have these been in the works for, you know, almost two decades? Why is it that they haven't gone through in your legal estimation?
Well, it was started back in the Clinton administration when they wanted to clean up the irrigation areas and then return them to a wild state of nature. Hmm. And fortunately, there were numerous members of the community in the Klamath Basin and in Northern California, Siskiyou County, that did not believe that this was in the best interests of their farms and ranches that were operated for generations. And they opposed what the government had wanted to do. Fortunately, there have been enough of them for all those years to push back the initiatives and to hold the government in check, except for a blink back in 2001, where the holdovers from the Clinton administration were able, during the early part of the Bush administration, to shut the water down on the irrigation project. And that, as you know, resulted in the infamous Bucket Brigade public protest, peaceful public protest, that ultimately resulted in the turn back of the water, turn on of the water.
At which point they stopped doing accounting on that project, but there's more on that. For those of you who think that this doesn't affect you, maybe you're listening in the East or in the Ukraine, these kinds of policies are very widespread. It isn't just on the West Coast. It isn't just in America. I swear, last week, every time I talk to Larry, he's like, it's socialism. It's socialism. I need to get one of those little easy buttons. It's socialism. So this is ultimately going to cost us all money. It may cost us all power, because we're talking about green hydropower that ultimately they want to take out, so that we will be beholden to dopey wind farms and even dopier solar panels that mm-hmm. And those companies are all going broke, by the way, just in case haven't kept up with the news. But we've got to take a really, really quick break, and then we'll be right back to explore all of that. So I always hate, before we take the first break, for people to think, wow, this isn't a show for me. It is. It's for you. This is We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I promise you'll have fun. Joining We the People Radio, we are here with Lawrence Kogan, the attorney for the Klamath Irrigation District and other various projects on the Klamath situation with the dams and the Klamath project. Larry, you want to give them a little snapshot on, I mean, when we talk about the Klamath project, it sounds like we're digging a hole and putting up a building or something like that, for those people who don't get what that means.
Well, the Klamath Irrigation Project is a major infrastructure project that was constructed in the early 20th century to take what were once arid desert lands and convert them into productive farming and ranching lands. And the project consists of 16 different irrigation districts and a series of canals and waterwork infrastructure that distributes water to farms and ranches in the valley within these 16 different districts. The Klamath Irrigation District, which I represent, is only one of those districts, but it's one of the largest ones, with a considerable amount of influence regarding reclamation policy within the project. And unfortunately, these days, Bureau of Reclamation is not known to have the capability, let alone the funding, to build any more you know, infrastructure projects like these. So their focus now has been to maintain and operate these projects that were built a century ago as efficiently as they can with the staff that they have. A lot of the institutional knowledge in engineering and technical is slowly or is rapidly at this point coming to an end because a lot of the people are now retiring. So they got all these new people in that don't know much about irrigation, let alone engineering of the project, and they're all concerned about fish, wildlife, and environment. And there comes the rub, is that you've got different cultures here with different agendas.
Well, I think the agenda part of it is what I think is taking center stage because they may not have any knowledge on the dams projects themselves, but they should know what is going to happen if they take them out. I mean, that's
well, that
there's a huge impact there. And
sure, but above the dams, you have now I think they're down to 1,200 farmers. They had 1,400 farmers at one point up there. You have a lot of food that comes from that area. And I forget how much I had heard, what, 1,600? It's a huge number of miles of waterways up there. What is it? Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head? The project services, you know, provides full-service water to approximately 210,000 acres.
Okay, there. That's what I was looking
for. And I'm reading right now. So you know, and viewers can look. The Bureau of Reclamation has a webpage dedicated to the Klamath Project. And you can find out a lot of information there. And all the dams and reservoirs that are along the way that help store water for eventual use on the different croplands. I mean, the Link River Dam is really at the base of the Upper Klamath Lake is really where the water is stored for the project. And some of that water comes in from in-stream flows from northern Oregon, north of the project.
So what is their thinking, I mean, as far as the what's going to be the benefit of taking these dams out and depriving all this farmland of irrigation water, what is the benefit?
Well, the dams that they're talking about taking out, removing, are below the project. They start off with the Boyle Dam, John C. Boyle Dam, and they work their way into Copco 1 and 2 in California, and also the Iron Gate Dam in California. Those are the four dams along the Klamath River that are slated for removal, and which are mentioned specifically in the amended Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. The one that was signed on April 6th without most of the community knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Or most of the people who were actually signatories to the agreement actually being on the agreement at the 11th
yes.
hour.
Klamath Irrigation District is a signatory to the original KHSA. However, it wasn't given an up-to-date draft of the agreement to be signed until the evening of March 31st. After it had already been announced that the signing ceremony would take place on Happy Camp on the Karuk Indian Reservation on April 6th. I guess everybody on the reservation at the signing ceremony was happy, but nobody else was.
I think you can say that again.
But Link River Dam and Keno River Dam are above, you know, Link River's right at and near the project. Keno is further down Klamath River. So it, you know, won't really affect the project very much, though the Lost River diversion flows into the Klamath River around that area. But Link River Dam may affect the project, but it's not yet slated to be removed. That's a drama that is yet to evolve.
Hmm.
Though we do know that a second agreement signed on April 6th, the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, provides for the full transfer of the operational control of Link River Dam from Pacific Corp, owned by, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, back to the Bureau of Reclamation, which owns the Link River Dam.
Hmm.
And so your guys up there in the Klamath Irrigation District, they've retained you to deal with what?
They retained me to deal with the replacement of a large, of a significant portion of the KID's infrastructure for which it is responsible to operate and maintain. But they've also asked me to address some of the KHSA issues, which at this point have been limited to the procedural provisions within the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, which were bypassed when the party, the governmental parties and the tribal parties to the to that agreement decided they were going to make a new agreement and not share the details of the new agreement with KID. They shared them with the Klamath Water Users Association because the attorney there, Mr. Simmons, and the director, former director Greg Addington, were very keen on the agreement, and they were the ones that worked along with the government and tribal parties to provide, to come up with the provisions, as they did back in 2010. So they were party to those secret meetings, but we weren't. And my clients were troubled by that. District members were troubled by that. Not the former board, though, because the former board was in bed with the Klamath Water Users Association and with the government.
So to put it in kind of a framework for people who don't follow this issue or do, but it's so darn confusing they've lost track of the moving parts, give us an idea of representative size of these. Because when you hear Klamath Water Users, they're the ones who are, they've come out with public statements saying that, you know, they represent all the irrigators up there. And then the Klamath Irrigation District kind of sounds like a few guys off in the corner that are just... dissenters. What's the breakdown on who's, covering
from what
this?
I understand, Aaron, from what I understand, the Klamath Water Users Association has a bigger bark than it has a bite. And it only represents one-third of the basin's irrigators. It claims to represent many more people than that, but it really doesn't. They were offended when KID, after the recent November election, decided that spending $250,000 a year for lobbying and political play wasn't worth the money, because when you really look at it closely, KWUA is a political organization that focuses on promoting policies that are not exactly in line with irrigator interests. They're environmentalists. They promote wildlife interests, not irrigator interests, and no matter what they say, their actions speak otherwise. So when people are listening, they should be careful to note that KWUA does not represent the interests of KID irrigators, though they did represent the interests of the former board that held its position for almost two decades or more. And they were all involved in creating these basin agreements that were supposed to address conflicts in water use among the tribes, the irrigators, and the environmentalists. So what was presented to the public was a conflict of interest between irrigators, farmers, irrigators, tribal interests, and environmentalists. They manufactured a conflict, so they had a solution. The solution was to create a compromise where farmers and ranchers gave up not only their access to water, but the exercise of their water rights, in order to mollify the tribal interests that claim Aboriginal time immemorial water rights in the in-stream flows that eventually make their way into the project. They also have exaggerated the fish and wildlife damage caused by these dams. They don't talk about a lot of other issues. Nobody's concerned about people. They're all concerned about fish, and they manufacture fish history by planting fish in regions of the river, areas of the river where there is no proof of indigenous existence of certain fish, coho salmon for one. They come up with water science that isn't really science-based policy, but policy-based science. That is supporting the dam removal effort.
Right, and you also have some records of decision that play in. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about that a little bit, because there's some backlash on the endangered species with farmers and things if they wind up taking out the dams. And then let's talk about some of the contracting issues up there. We actually called the show the Heavy Hand of the Department of the Interior, and I know we have some fun music to play based on your op-ed, so we don't want to cheat anybody out of that. We'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People Radio. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This particular show has a lot of moving parts. We've done a bunch of shows on it because it's such an issue out here. And it does tie in with this, you know, for all those of you that are wondering what the Obama administration's going to do before they get out of office at the end of the year. Well, this is one of those things. So we don't want you to miss any of the pieces along the way, since we're right smack in the middle of it, because I think if you miss any of the parts along the way, you won't be able to figure it out. If you have come in late on this topic, we've done lots of programs about this. But I did list a helpful link from the Klamath Basin Crisis website, actually, on the bottom of today's page. And it's got probably more information than you could read in a week. But if you're looking to try to make sense of some of this, listen to some of our former shows, maybe do a little reading there. It's there's a lot of opinion out there. I'd steer kind of clear of that and stick to the things that are factual. We try to bring you facts here, although we have our opinions. Well, I mean, everybody has their opinions. It's silly,
humble,
you know.
Humble but accurate opinions. Yeah,
humble but accurate opinions, but we do try to stick to the facts, ma'am. So, Larry, what's going on with the interior guys and contracting and whatnot up there? Can you talk about that?
Yes, we can, since it is public knowledge that the there is a portion of the KID infrastructure along the Sea Canal that is known as the Sea Canal Flume, which is pretty much kind of like a portion of a canal that's elevated above ground, and it's encased in kind of like a concrete hot dog bun. And in order to get the water to move across the district, this flume, kind of like a slide in an amusement park, carries the water across an area. The structure is about 4,400 feet long, and it's about 95 years old. I mean, the whole project's 95 years old, and this particular portion of it takes on a lot of stresses due to the amount of water that's being moved across it. And several years ago, the BOR had identified this structure as, you know, wearing down and in need of repair. And so for the last several years, KID has been undertaking maintenance and operation of this structure to ensure that it maintains its level of safety and doesn't pose any risk to humans or animals. And in 2013, the BOR then identified it as requiring repairs, you know, significant repair or even replacement, and then came to the conclusion that replacement was the only option. So they started requiring KID to come up with scenarios under which this structure would be replaced, and they had to hire and put out bids for an engineering firm, which they have secured, and then the engineering firm was to undertake an engineering analysis as to the best way to replace it. And that project has taken on, at this point, a significance because of the costs involved. At a minimum, it's going to cost $7.5 million to replace. It's likely to cost $10 million or more when all is said and done because of the expenses involved in engineering and oversight, as well as other types of expenses that are required that the district will incur. And then you don't even get into higher costs due to unpredictable project overrun.
And so to put it in perspective, there are many Bureau of Reclamation projects that have happened across the country. I forget how many, 130 or something like that. There are a lot of these large infrastructure projects. This particular one has, 16 water districts in it. This one water district has to fix a part of it because they're the people who do the operation and maintenance, but they technically don't own. Help me out with that. They technically don't own the hardware, well, right? The actual flumes?
The climate irrigation's relationship with the Bureau of Reclamation is detailed in an agreement that was first executed in 1954. And that agreement provides for the Bureau of Reclamation to retain title to the KID's infrastructure, known as the transfer of works, while KID would be responsible for operating and maintaining it. That means it would have to deal with the cost of doing that. Now, since they don't own the infrastructure, it ends up that the Bureau of Reclamation is the only lender of resort available, because without collateral, no lender would loan funds to the KID. So the Bureau of Reclamation came up with this contract to loan it money, all of it being repayable, none of it being, provided by the Bureau without the obligation to repay. One of the issues that surrounded this contract was whether a portion of it could be provided, portion of the funding could be provided without repayment obligations. There's a law out there, the Omnibus Land Act of 2009, which Congress had passed and the President signed into law, that provides for the Secretary with the option to designate the sea flume replacement as an emergency item, because it would pose imminent risk to human health and safety. But that designation has not been given to the sea flume because it doesn't pose an imminent risk of public health to public health and safety. And because it isn't designated as such, it's not entitled up to 35% non-repayable finance. So $10 million will come out of the pockets of every irrigator in the district, and assessments have already been increased to accommodate or to compensate for that loan that they're going to have to repay.
And in the scope of all things, how big a project is this?
This $10 million project right now, I think, is the largest among the largest of project replacement in the country.
Okay.
It's an important project for the Northwest, given the size of the climate irrigation project overall.
So this isn't just some podunk deal that affects a few farmers, and it's just a thing that runs some water. I mean, this is a big deal.
Remember, the project's over, it's almost 100 years old, if
right.
not older.
Right.
And therefore, that means that portions of this project will have to be replaced piecemeal. So there's going to be extra, additional significant costs to be incurred by farmers and ranchers within the various irrigation districts. KID faces another potential replacement repair issue, a canal, which will be probably several million dollars. So people can't take this replacement cost lightly. And they must look very carefully at the terms and conditions that the government would impose in a financing agreement. And that's what raised concerns recently, that the finance agreement that the government, the BOR, wanted to impose on the district were quite different than the terms and conditions of the 1954 agreement governing the relationship between BOR and Klamath Irrigation District. The contract terms would have substantially altered that relationship. The only problem is that BOR did not proceed in an open, transparent way, in a fair-minded way, to discuss this issue with the district. It decided by itself what conditions it would impose on the district and basically say, they told the district, you take it or we're not going to provide the financing. It may not be available because we may have to reallocate it to other projects. And unless you sign it soon, you may not get water delivery in 2016. And so it's only when, you know, that the district followed the government's dictate to vote on the approval of the financing agreement as is, the way the government wanted it to be implemented according to the government's own terms without negotiation, only when that vote took place under duress did the government let water start to flow through the sea canal.
So they were basically ransoming the water for the outcome they wanted.
That was part of it.
You will sign the contract or you won't get water. And it was interesting because at the time that vote took place with the irrigation district. Now, here are people who just wanted to grow food, you know? I mean, that's really what they were after. But, you know, you've got to do things in order to, like anything. It's like being part of neighborhood watch or school board or city council or anything else. So these guys are on this water board. Was not their life's ambition to be on a water board, I'm sure. And at the end of that meeting where they had to agree to sign the contract, they didn't sign it, but they had to agree to sign it.
While a government attorney is basically lining them out.
Yeah. And at the end of it, when the government attorney was asked, you know, if this were yours to do, you know, and this was let's translate this into the real world, and it was a private contract, would you sign it? And the guy said, well, you know, no. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's a sucky contract, and nobody in their right mind would sign it, but
he didn't really
you're going to have to sign it.
He didn't say that, but he did laugh and say he wouldn't sign it. So
well, it
kind of tells you something.
Because, right, and we spoke to other irrigators outside the atmospherics of the meeting, and we asked them, you know, if these were the terms and conditions of a contract that you had to sign for your private farm business, would you sign it? And in every instance, they said no. Makes no sense. One of the conditions that were imposed pursuant to this contract was, well, even though the 54 agreement provided for 12 months to cure a failure to pay on time or a failure to perform an obligation for operations and maintenance on time, you still had 12 months to fix the problem under the old agreement before the BOR could legally stop the flow of water, or even take back the transferred works from the district. The Sea Canal financing agreement didn't provide for any period of cure. That means if you didn't pay on time, a couple days goes by, or if you didn't perform an O&M, an operations and maintenance item, that you were required to perform under a BOR schedule, they could stop water delivery, and they could take back the transferred works. That means the district would not have the opportunity, which it has under the 54 agreement, to buy back the transferred works. And if they bought back the transferred works, they would be able to operate it almost like a normal business, and they would be able to use the transferred works, if they knew its value, to collateralize whatever financing they had to secure in the private market, which means that they wouldn't have to always have to go to the BOR for money. It would give them independence.
Hey, Larry, Bob's making me an offer I can't refuse. Can you hear it? Can you hear it in the background?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that was the problem with this contract.
I think people will enjoy the article that you, the op-ed you did for the Capital Press. Bureau of Reclamation makes offer irrigators can't refuse.
Yeah, let's take a break. We're going to cover that.
we will hit that right when we come back. So for those of you that are too young, this is the music from The Godfather. I can't believe how many people haven't seen The Godfather. It's just wrong.
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
We'll be right back.
I'm going to make him an offer.
going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Okay, that's the scene from the movie, the tiny scene from the movie. Because we did find a lot of people who didn't know what that joke was about. Which is, unfortunately. It's wrong.
There are a lot of people who are younger than 40 years old, and they never saw the movie.
What the heck? I didn't think that was possible. Okay.
It's actually probably among the most famous lines in the movie.
I know.
And that movie's known internationally.
I know. Mm-hmm. That's why I was blown away. So when they made them the offer they can't refuse, they did kind of refuse it a little bit because they asked you to help them, right?
Yes, they did. They had approved through vote of the agreement, but they never signed the agreement because under the process, the agreement has to be put to the public for public comment for a period of 60 days. It was put forth for public comment on March 31st, and until May 31st, the end of May 31st, there will be a continued comment period. It's important that members of the Klamath community weigh in on the public comment. And because, really, why would they allow themselves to incur this level of debt without voicing their opinion? One of the other disturbing features of this contract is that it would allow the lender, the BOR, to adjust the repayment period when in their own discretion they thought that the KID has enough money in their bank account. And they could shorten the period, which would start at 10 years to repay $10 million. That's $1 million of principal a year plus interest. That's a lot of money that farmers and ranchers would have to fork over, which would raise assessments significantly. And if you have a couple of bad years in production or in the commodity pricing area, then that's going to be very difficult. It could result in a default of payment, and that could result in the turnover of the transferred works back to the BOR. So it's almost a contract that's intended to fail, the way it's been structured by the legal department of BOR Sacramento. That was what we were objecting to. So we went to Sacramento this past week, and we discussed in a professional way what our concerns were. And the regional director was very welcoming and hearing our comments. And hopefully, as he has promised us, that he will seriously take into account our concerns in order to open up once again the period to negotiate the contract, actually negotiate it for the first time. That means the public comment period may be suspended. And that would be a good thing so that the KID membership is, for the first time, adequately represented at the negotiating table.
And that's a huge, huge step in the right direction. And we need to take a hard break at the top of the hour. And when we come back, real briefly, we need to talk about somebody who, as a result of that meeting...
is working for the Forest Service now.
It doesn't work there anymore. Oh, ouch, it left a mark.
Yeah, the seats will be changing. So we're here with Mr. Lawrence Kogan for another hour, chatting about all these different things. Again, you're listening to We the People Radio. We air on the West Coast from noon to 2 on Sundays, and you will hear the first hour of the show in the Philadelphia, New Jersey market on WNJC Conservative Commandos Network from 2 to 3. We'll be right back with you.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Here on Sundays from noon to 2, you can listen to all of us. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And together we talk about subjects that will probably make you angry, but they're informative. And in the meantime, you might laugh a little bit. So.
And it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Contrary to what you'll...
So help you God. Yeah. Big G.
Yeah. Just because it's on the internet doesn't make it true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So today we're speaking with Lawrence Kogan, that we call Larry. But you'll find him online as Lawrence. Because that's what his folks picked. Let's see. He's the managing principal of the Kogan Law Group and president and CEO of the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. And you can read more about that. It's not the bad sustainable development, as we went through in the first hour. It's the good kind. He has 25 years of experience, international experience on business and law, counseling public, private, and private clients on cross-border transactional planning and policy matters. I always like that part. Enabling recognition of the legislative, regulatory, policy, and trade and investment risks and opportunities that their activities may engender. And you know, out here in the West, we've got a lot of all of that.
We have a lot of that.
A lot of policy problems.
On top of that.
We've got all sorts of stuff. So he is helping currently an irrigation district out here in the West. They are up in southern end of Oregon, but they are part of the Klamath Project, which was put together in 1905, large project. Larry, tell me again, how many acres? I should write that down.
Well, I think it's about 220,000 acres.
220,000 acres. So it's a lot. And you have 16 different irrigation districts. You had, at one point before they shut the water off, it was like 1,400 farmers back in 2001, and I guess now it's down to like 1,200. They grow potatoes, hay, alfalfa, horseradish. I know there's other stuff, but those are the ones I could think of off the top of my pointy head. You have a lot of agriculture up there. And so where you have agriculture, you have to have water. So it's a high desert environment, and the irrigation districts run this web of infrastructure, I guess, that is the project. So when we talk about the project, we're not talking about the typical thing, you know, I'm doing a project, so it starts and stops. This is an ongoing thing. It is currently being run by Bureau of Reclamation, because none of the irrigation districts have taken back their hardware in the project, you know, whether it is a flume that runs water or a head gate or what they call works in irrigation talk. They have not taken those back in large part because they can't get an accounting from the Bureau of Reclamation. That has not been done since 2001 when they shut the water off on them.
So we give them money and they spend it and they don't have to account for it? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. The irrigation districts pay the Bureau of Reclamation. The Bureau of Reclamation bills them for certain activities that go on, but an accounting on the project, the whole thing, has not been done since 2001. And interestingly enough, it is the only project in the United States that does not have current accounting. And that's from a GAO report that I will be happy to link on the webpage. I haven't done it yet, but I'll do it.
And how much money are we talking about? Any idea? Obviously, it's in the millions, but...
Gazillions. I mean, just for instance, we spoke about this in the first hour, the Klamath water users that represent about a third of the irrigators up there. Membership in that organization for the Klamath Irrigation District that we keep calling the KID. Sorry, we're going to be acronyming you today. The KID, their dues to that organization are $238,000 a year. So that's just to be part of a group that would, you know, be supposed to represent you. And that's got nothing to do with running your irrigation district or farming your land or any of those things. So imagine how much it is.
Yeah, and we don't know where that money's going?
Well, no, that's different money. I mean, that's not Bureau money. But I have no idea what the Bureau take is. They also lease land up there, and that lease land money should go back against the project and reduce the debt that the farmers owe. But we can't know what that is because it hasn't been done since 2001. So, Mr. Kogan, I know you put that to the Bureau, and I know the congressional district in Congressman LaMalfa's district has also requested the Bureau provide an accounting. What do you think about that likelihood of that happening?
Well, as the director, the regional director, had indicated, that may not be the easiest of feats to accomplish because of lack of skilled persons in the position to provide such an accounting. which seems to be a Department of Interior systemic problem, because I have clients who are irrigators on the Flathead Indian Reservation in Montana, and that infrastructure project, the Flathead Irrigation Project, also hasn't gotten an accounting. The General Accountability Office of Congress had produced a report on the Flathead Irrigation Project. Actually, they didn't even produce a report on the Flathead Irrigation Project. They never visited that project, but they took the word of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which manages it, and they had reported a number of somewhere $82 million deferred operations and maintenance costs. That means costs to repair the project that was not prepared, not repaired, which means that those irrigators are in the hole already for at least $82 million. And they can't verify the number because somehow the Bureau of Indian Affairs can't line up the columns to add the numbers right. We have the same problem on the climate. The BOR can't line the columns up straight to add the numbers.
So let me get this right. They're saying they don't have the personnel to gather these numbers up and give an accounting. So we're just supposed to say, oh, okay, we'll just take your word for it and just press on doing what we're doing?
Exactly. They say, please trust us. We have your best interest in mind.
Yeah, trust us.
In other words, if you go back to Ronald Reagan era, when he joked, the worst thing you could hear is, hi, we're from the government, and we're here to help you.
Yeah. So just trust them that they're spending the money okay, because they always do, and
right.
Let's just move forward and continue doing what we're doing, and let's not worry about where the money's going.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can tell you is that I'm sending actually an email to you all right now, actually to Aaron, and I think you should open this document, because what it is, it's a Bureau of Reclamation document from 2014 that says that a portion of the monies that the irrigators pay into the reclamation fund, guess where that's going?
Hmm.
It's going to pay for tribal water rights settlements, i.e. the Klamath Indians and the Hoopa and the Karuk and the Yurok tribe water rights settlements. That's where the money's going.
Hmm.
They can account for that, but they can't account for how the project operates.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, and how much do we owe, and how much have we paid on that little portion of the deal?
Well, I would invite both of you. Aaron, if you would look on your email.
Yeah, doing it. Oh, here we go.
The document to the top, and then you can see the highlighted portion.
Wow.
Nice. I will add that to the page as we speak.
And it actually dates back to efforts in 2008. We found 2008 testimony wherein the Bureau of Reclamation, and I think John Bezdek was mentioned in this testimony, was trying, there are people who are testifying, trying to have reclamation funds systemically to be used to pay for tribal water rights. So back then, it was only being used on a case-by-case basis. Now, in the current administration, I think they're just using it regularly to pay for tribal water rights settlements instead of having to go back to Congress for appropriations, which feeds into...
No, the Obama administration circumventing Congress?
No,
I'm shocked.
You know how they follow the rule of law, don't you?
Yeah, I... Unfortunately, yes, I do.
Yeah, their law.
They follow the rule of men and not the rule of law. But if you look at the document, you will see that it says tribal water rights settlements. It mentions the KBRA, for instance.
Klamath Basin
now,
Restoration Agreement that died in the House at the end of last year.
Right, and Klamath Water Users Association people, including Dan Keppen and Greg Addington and I think his name is Mr. Simmons, the attorney for that organization. They all wanted the KBRA out there. They were very shocked that Congress didn't approve of it in December 2015. So what they've managed to do is they've disaggregated, broken it into pieces, and they're inserting it into the new agreements.
Wow.
So, and it even mentions the Trinity River Restoration Project that's funded for the benefit of the tribes down there. So that's where the money's going, but they can't figure out how to account for the project. They can account for the tribal water rights settlements.
I'm still stuck on the fact that they get all this money and they just don't have the people to account for it, so you're just not going to get an accounting.
And keep paying us, by the way.
And keep paying us, by the way, because we're doing a great job and your problems are all in your head, I guess.
And they're required by reclamation law to provide an annual accounting to the project, if not the district's portion of the project.
Right. But that's an old law.
And they've done neither.
So what if the districts opted not to pay their bill until reclamation gave them an accounting? Do they have any ability to do something like that?
Well, it would make it interesting if Congress were to propose someone in Congress were to propose a bill to that effect. It would certainly say that if you can't come up with an accounting for 15 years, you're suffering more than incompetence and negligence at the Bureau.
Oh, without a doubt.
It's almost like a retribution for the Bucket Brigade. It's a retribution that says we're not going to do things for the irrigators. We've got more important things to do. We have to save fish. We have to save tribal water rights. And it seems to me that that's a policy decision that was made a while ago. Maybe it was incompetence during the Bush administration, but I think it's a policy direction under the Obama administration.
Well, and reclamation was put on the books to do these large infrastructure projects to benefit people. Bridges, water, dams, that kind of stuff.
Well, when the project was finished, I mean, the irrigators were subject to a repayment contract to pay back for the cost of the infrastructure over a course of years. And the way the 54 agreement was structured, they recognized that repayment obligation and that obligation to make maintenance and operational repairs, and to pay for water delivery was going to take time because agriculture, has cycles, ebbs and flows.
Sure.
And the point is that it was understanding of that irregularity at times and how that could affect a farmer's ability to repay a contract. Now, this Sea Canal Flume Replacement Contract didn't particularly take into account any of those important considerations. So in addition to the lack of a cure provision, they decided to make an adjustable repayment provision, which could put the farmers in serious, serious jeopardy financially, causing a default, resulting in the Bureau taking over the project again, which it seems like the Bureau wants to do. It wants to control all the infrastructure, the dams, the gates to the project, and the project infrastructure within the boundaries of the canals and the ditches.
Well, they sure wouldn't have to work with all these irrigation districts, and they wouldn't have all of that. They could just dictate.
Well, yeah, that's that European-style socialism you're talking about, because it is a regulatory, overbearing attempt to control economic activity for higher calling, such as wildlife protection and environmental protection.
Yeah, because there was a quote someone had sent me revolving around Ed Sheets, actually. Maybe it's on that page. On the break, I will look, because it gave the new direction of the Bureau of Reclamation, and that was quite a while ago. I think most people would be surprised. I've added both the documents, just a little FYI for folks that are listening on Sunday afternoon. I've added both those documents for people after the fact. There you go. You have the added benefit of having it all there the whole time. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. I'll look that up. We'll be ready with our quotes on the new direction of reclamation when we come back with Mr. Lawrence Cogan.
Well, you filled
you
up
pulled
my
it
head
just at the right time.
With so many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped.
Give a damn for sale.
we're back. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We stink at taking breaks, and I'm especially bad at the first one in every hour. It's like, Bob's got to actually just turn everything off, start the music, and make us do it.
Yeah.
Or we're late the whole time. While we were on the break there, I was thinking about one of the meetings that I attended with Larry last weekend. Just so happened we had one of those people on the line with us, and they only had one thing to say about their interaction with Larry.
You're killing me, Larry.
For you Sit and Sleep fans.
Okay, we couldn't resist. That is, however, what is written all over their faces.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hey, talk to us about the meeting with the gal that now doesn't work there anymore. What happened there? Did somebody get out of line?
Well, she was the former area manager for Klamath Falls,
Bureau of Reclamation.
Bureau of Reclamation.
Yes, she ran the Klamath Falls office and was chiefly responsible for engineering the terms and conditions of that agreement, I would suppose, though I am not so sure that it wasn't also dictated from above.
Sure.
She had a mystique about her which showed me that she was doing a lot more than she was letting on. She was meeting in private with people, both from the district and the board, the employees, the engineering contractor, trying to ensure that what she wanted to get done actually got done. Unfortunately, along the way, her actions had disrupted relationships, not only between the district and the bureau, but between the district's management and its employees, the district's board and its management, and the district and its engineering firm. You can't get things done when you create that kind of level of disruption. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it did result in our writing some articles out there in order to wake up the public about what was going on, and I believe that that may have prompted the action taken on Friday, last week, following our meeting. She is, from what I understand, to be moved into the forest.
Off you go to the forest. We don't
Off
have Siberia.
We don't have Siberia. Yeah, you're
so
going
you
to the
forest.
Yeah.
Hey, and here's this thing from the January 1988 Northwest Energy News. So this is not new. This is not an Obama thing. This happened a long time ago. U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has announced plans to change its mission from one of developing water resources to one of conserving them. After more than 85 years in the business, of dam building and irrigating deserts for agricultural purposes, the Bureau has concluded that its mission in those areas has been accomplished. It's over now. The new mission will include taking care of existing projects, some of the largest and most complex irrigation systems in the world, being more efficient and more responsive to environmental concerns. The Bureau may also apply its engineering capabilities to looming problems, such as the depletion of groundwater and the buildup of silt and toxic waste in Bureau projects. That's funny, though. They want to take out the dams, and they're going to let 20 million cubic yards of silt go down the river.
There's no toxic waste, and they weren't talking about those.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah,
I got that wrong.
Yeah, those are exempt.
So that was 1988. Interesting. And if you go on our website, wethepeopleradio.us, you will see it on the Mr. Ed page. Just scroll down. It's there for your fun.
Outstanding. So she is now going to be dispatched to the forest. And somebody else is coming in that has a little more experience, and
Who's coming in. The guy is coming in temporarily.
Yeah.
Who has had
a great relationship.
Right. One of the gentlemen who was sitting at the table with us during last Thursday's meeting will be responsible for selecting the full-time manager of the Klamath office. The person who they've appointed only on an interim basis, from what we understand, they're pulling out of retirement. And they will manage that office beginning tomorrow, Monday, until the full-time manager is selected. Hmm. And that article appears in the Herald and News, written by none other than the yellow journalist Lacey Gerald. The article was I think, out in the Friday newspaper.
Boy, it's really starting to sound like Bureau of Reclamation is seriously short on talent. They don't have anybody that can balance their books, and they don't have anybody when you have a mid-level manager type person leave, nobody they can move in and kind of fill the chair. They got to pull somebody out of retirement. Wow.
Well, you know, there is a lack. You know, it's interesting. During the course of all this, we did some recent research that we found there was actually a National Academy of Sciences report from 2006, which I'm going to send to you, that talks about the lack of institutional memory within the Reclamation Bureau.
Hmm.
And they have some problems. They have to, you know, the National Academy of Science in 2006 wrote up a report that said that they've got to undertake certain structural changes to make the Bureau more efficient. And it's quite interesting that this has been out there, but no one's talked about it.
Yeah.
So you're dealing, in other words, we have two parties in a relationship, and one party really isn't able to perform the way it's supposed to perform under the law.
And yet they seem to hold a lot of the cards.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, they were also dealing with a board of directors in the past, which also wasn't really up to snuff either. So, you know, when you have two parties to an agreement that were not up to snuff, then you have lots of issues that were not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we have here. And unfortunately, this new board, after taking office following a very controversial November election, it's now handed all of this confusion and
controversy and everything over to the new
right,
folks.
Right, and they have to clean up the mess. The milk has already been spilled, and they've got to clean it up.
Right.
And that's a big task, especially with all these issues that are outstanding. And all these agreements that are being secretly discussed behind the curtain, as in The Wizard of Oz. And is this, you know, the Herald and News, April 23rd, 2016, Klamath BOR Director leaving. That is the news headline. So things are in flux. The district irrigators have not been told the truth, and we're trying in the most transparent and open and inclusive way possible to get district members up to speed.
With what little information they're willing to give you.
Right.
Yeah, this is something they're not used to. And
is something that I've noticed too, is a lot of these agencies for so long have operated with nobody challenging them on anything. They've pretty much just had an open checkbook. Nobody has stepped up and questioned anything. And now they're starting to get questioned. They're getting backed into a corner, and they really don't know what to do. They've just never been in this position before, and I think it's hilarious.
Well, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be hilarious.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sad that there's so many families involved in this that are being hurt by it. But here you have an agency that is pretty much telling everybody they can't do the job. They don't have the people to do it, and yet
however, if you don't do what they say, they'll shut your water off.
That's right. They can't do the job, but they've been pretending to do the job for how long now? And now they're being questioned, and they don't know what to do. It's pathetic.
Right, and it was just so offensive.
It is.
To the irrigators that they would not only just put out a contract that was bad, but they would say, you've got to sign that contract now, or we can't prevent the failure of water delivery. We can't prevent the funds from being allocated to another project. You have no choice. It's almost like an extortion contract.
Sure it is. It's making it sound
well,
like...
You signed a contract, and we won't hurt you.
Yeah, you signed a contract today because parts of this project are ready to collapse. They weren't yesterday, but they are today. And so now you have to sign it today.
Yeah, but the interesting part is it's an emergency, but they won't...
But they won't call it an emergency.
But they won't call it an emergency contract. And
because that allows them to get emergency funds.
Correct.
Well, they said that when they appealed, when the recent director of the Klamath Falls office, when she was still in her position before Thursday, said that when she approached the Office of Reclamation located in Denver that had quote-unquote jurisdiction over this issue, they had refused the request of KID to get the 35% non-reimbursable financing arrangement. But she never gave a reason why they said no, and she didn't think it was a good for the district to obtain the denial in writing, which was very curious to me as an administrative law attorney, because you want that stuff in writing so you can address it.
Sure.
And so that was one of the other issues that we talked about, is get everything done in writing so that we can see the reasoning behind the refusal of the BOR to provide that type of arrangement. Now, there are reports out there, mostly coming from Lacey Gerald of Herald and News, that says that we endangered the 35%. That's hogwash. The 35% is only an issue if the Bureau designates the repair itself or the replacement itself as an emergency item, imminent risk to public health and safety. That never happened. But when you get past the designation, you get to the issue of whether the applicant for that kind of funding arrangement did certain things that met the requirements of the statute. Now, the statute has certain conditions, but the agency was responsible for making rules to implement those requirements to show how they could be met. BOR didn't make any such rules. Therefore, first you get to the emergency designation as to the type of repair needed. Then you get to the eligibility of the applicant for the special 35% non-reimbursable financing to see if they did things in the past, that past activities justify giving them this special treatment. Okay? We're not there yet. Okay? They haven't provided any conditions for that, for showing how the district met or did not meet that set of standards. So we didn't endanger anything regarding the 35% financing arrangement. We never got to the second step.
Right. But they can deny it. I mean, they can deny the funds.
Exactly. Right. Which is what makes this new energy bill, Senate 2012, and the Merkley-Wyden amendment to it very, very interesting.
Yeah, Amendment 3288. I should post that as well. We need to take another quick break. We will be back with Lawrence Kogan. We're chatting about the Klamath project, the whole big ball of wax and all the irrigation.
My head's getting ready to explode. Throw in this level of incompetence.
Every now and then I get people who say, well, I don't understand what's going on up there. And I'm like, ooh, well, we'll have to sit down for a really long time and talk about it. We'll be right back with you. You can find all this information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Things happen while walking. The metal in my head kinds of clings as I walk. Freaks my balance out. So the natural thought is just clogged up. Totally clogged up. And we need to unplug these dams and make the natural flow.
We need to unplug these dams. What language was that anyway?
It was English.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was so sophisticated. has to be correct.
Where do you find these freak shows?
That's gorillas with a Z.
Huh. I need to get out more.
Not that far out.
Mr. Kogan?
Yes.
We've got approximately 20 minutes left with one break sandwiched in between. What are we missing? Anything? What can people do? I know I can hear them out there going, we need to do something. Is there any stuff people can do besides pay attention?
Support the new board in its effort to get to the bottom of things.
At the Klamath Irrigation District,
KID. At the Klamath Irrigation District, because they are conscientious and they want to find out what happened and to correct it.
And the pressure up there on them is immense.
It's very immense because a lot of it is staged by the opposition. The minority board members as well as former board members that were behind the decision in the past to sign on to these basin agreements, not knowing what they contain. The KBRA had $90 million of funding that was to be provided to irrigators in exchange for sacrificing a portion of their water rights. The only problem is that nobody ever had filed water claims to quantify what their water rights were that they were giving up. So they never knew whether the $90 million was going to cover everybody. But they all signed out of the agreement because it was one of those feel-good things to do. Okay? They weren't informed. The district members have not been informed about anything for the last 7, 8, 9 years. That's what this new board is intending to do, so that they understand what they've gotten themselves into. And, you know, Mr. Sheets is the facilitator of these agreements, and he's obviously concerned that this process of disclosure and transparency may shed light on the features of these agreements that he would rather keep dark and muddled.
And why do you think that is?
Because really these agreements are not good for irrigators. The threat is that the tribes will sue and sue and sue, and their rights are not certain either. The tribes don't know whether they're going to win or not. But the threat is large enough when magnified by Mr. Sheets and all the people that want the agreements, you know, the Klamath Water Users Association, the people in Tule Lake District, the people in other districts that believe this is the best thing since sliced bread, but they really don't even know what they're signing on to, even though they've helped craft the agreements. They don't know what the bottom line is going to be. They really don't know.
Well, do they have
come out?
Have they had legal representation in the past that goes over these things before they sign them?
Well, apparently the same lawyer, the Tule Lake Irrigation District, the lawyer for the Tule Lake Irrigation District is, I believe, the lawyer for the Klamath Water Users Association. Think there might be a little conflict of interest?
Yeah, a little bit. That seems odd.
You know, and then the former attorney for KID, he was also involved in all of this stuff.
So if they keep them on the payroll, they're just going to go along with everything status quo.
Well, it seems as though they were all on the same page when these agreements were signed. Okay, the fact that the new KID board is now looking at these agreements more closely is alarming to these people. It's alarming to Mr. Sheets because they thought they had a done deal. But because the KID board, the new board, is now looking at it closely, I believe that was the reason for not telling the board about the terms of the new agreement. They did not want the questions to be asked that needed to be asked. They did not want the light shone on those dark areas that can be read 3 or 4 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're trying to deceive somebody, you write things in a way that you think is clever, which will confuse the other party. Now, this Senate Bill 2012 that just came through the U.S. Senate that will be going into conference between the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate in the future, talks about it has an amendment, 3288, sponsored by, I believe, the Democrats, senators from Oregon,
Wyden and Merkley. Right.
That would, in effect, horse trade horse trade, the Secretary of Interior's funding of, you know, projects that would help irrigators, like the Sea Canal financing contract, in exchange for the use of those monies in other areas to promote, resolution of water conflicts among irrigators and among and between irrigators and between irrigators and tribal interests to protect the environment and the fish, and to come up with a lower cost of power, which was where the Pacific Core dam removal issue pops up. It's amazing that in 2006, when Pacific Core, owned by Berkshire Hathaway Warren Buffett, acquired the four dams on the Klamath River, they couldn't meet the terms of the old license with FERC to provide a low-cost block of power for the irrigators. That was part of the license. For some reason, they couldn't afford to do it. So the Public Utility Commissions of Oregon and California, when COPCO, which is a bi-state entity, sold the dams to Warren Buffett, they agreed to waive the low-cost block of power obligation. We found testimony from 2013 from a Pacific Corp rep that showed that the power rates went up 2,700% in 6 years. Okay, that's enough to set any wow. business into a bankruptcy situation
sure.
because they can't meet payments. Luckily, Doug Whitsitt from the state of Oregon had, for at least the Oregon irrigators, enacted legislation that would have eased the pain over a course of 7 years, gradual pain. In California, they had major sticker shock. But the point is, these issues now have been put into this Senate Amendment 3288 as a horse trade. It's another extortion agreement. You do as we ask you to do, and we will pay for what it is you want. But one of the biggest problems with this 3288 that a lot of people don't see because of the clever, devious way it was written, is that it authorizes, Congress, through this amendment, would authorize the Interior Secretary to enter into all these agreements. The ones they already signed on April 6th without telling anybody about them, plus the ones they have yet to tell people about that they plan on signing.
Oh, that's nice. So it just pushes everything forward at a little higher rate of speed.
Well, and it was written in...
And it also... You know, it raises the profile of the Klamath Water Users Association into something it doesn't actually. It raises their profile to a level that's higher than what it actually is. It gives them more voice than they deserve.
Well, they had a big press conference the other day that they've saved the world and all the people on it. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you have a confluence of people there, a group of people there that believe in fish and environmental and tribal ideology, yeah, that's going to make them feel good. They believe that they've finally slam dunked this thing, but they underestimate the other side. They don't think we all can read.
Well, again, it gets back to in the past, nobody paid attention. And
well, they kind of had everybody bamboozled.
Well, they were all drinking the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Now we found out that the Kool-Aid is laced with arsenic.
Yeah, and they're forcing us to
drink
it.
And we don't
want to drink
the Kool-Aid anymore.
Yeah, but they're telling us you have to, or else. Yeah.
Isn't that nice? It's a good deal if you can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
How obvious was it in the Amendment 3288, and for those people who don't look up bills a lot, your best bet is to go to congress.gov. Pull up a Senate bill, just click on, you know, what you're looking for. It says current legislation and put in S-2012. It's actually the Energy Policy Modernization Act of 2016. So it wouldn't on the surface look like anything that had to do with the Klamath. It's buried in an amendment. And amendments. There are 362 of them. So you'd have to do a little digging further, and it's number 3288. I'll post that link, though. We need to take a really quick break, and then we'll be back, finish off the top of the hour, with Mr. Lawrence Kogan, who is the attorney representing the Klamath Irrigation District. And we're talking about all things in the Klamath Project and the dams, and it's lots of moving parts, and it's far from over. So you'll hear about it again, just by way of warning. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
dreamers wake the nation. Come, the new Jerusalem. Silver cities rise, the morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on with a song.
But there's one more thing I gotta say. Hats off to Larry. It may sound cruel, but you laughed at me when you said we were through. You told me lies, but your turn to cry, cry, cry. Now that Larry said goodbye to you.
Better hope Larry doesn't say goodbye to any of us out here. We'll be hosed. Because we were taking a pretty good hosing before he showed up. They call you the lawyer from New York, right?
No, it's that lawyer.
Oh, that lawyer from New York. Sorry, I forgot. Right. Not that's the, right. That.
And you have to say it, with contempt.
Right. I know, I'm not forgetting.
You're killing me, Larry!
And it is kind of funny, though, because they are not used to, they're not used to doing battle in an arena with a real player. You know, they're used to telling everybody we're going to shut your water off, and everyone, you know, rolls over for it because they're panicked and they don't have any resources. So before we run out of time, thank you for bringing resources to the table and giving these guys a run for their money.
Exactly. This is, I think, the first time they've been challenged a long time.
Oh, yeah. How long do you think this whole thing will go?
I think we've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of what I was
thinking. Yeah, I think the corruption's going to go all the way to the top on this one.
But, you know, you have to realize, again, this is a White House agenda that's being implemented by a regional office. And they're going to have to bring in reserves to come in and get the job done for the president. So there's a lot more to come our way, and we all have to be alert as to any new faces and new activities.
And are you going to work on the Klamath Dams issue? Are you able to talk about that at all?
At this point, I can't disclose that.
Right, okay.
But for KID, KID's focus is on the process that the BOR has violated in the original KHSA that provides for meet and confer of the parties when there is a dispute or an issue of concern. And when we raise the issue before they signed the amended KHSA and the power and facilities agreement, they ignored us. So how are we to know whether they're going to violate other portions of the new agreement they just signed? Their word isn't good, in other words, until they show by their actions that their word is good. Thus far, there's no proof that they're going to abide by the agreements. They do what they want. You know, it's almost as if they're quoting from Goodfellas, where if you remember, Henry Hill said, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. Okay.
As far back as I can remember.
And because the White House does hearken from Chicago, this is not something that should be dismissed readily. Now, the people who are now working in the regional office in Sacramento, the head man, I think he appears to be an honest, good man. But only his actions will determine whether he can do what he says he wants to do.
Well, going forward, what should people look out for besides changes of players and all that? What about all this misinformation, I guess, from, you know, Klamath water users trying to say that the Klamath Irrigation District guys are just crazy and, you know, putting everyone in jeopardy and all that? What would you say to that as their representative?
Well, the former board members and the minority board members, they don't want anyone to look back in time, because if we start looking back in time, we may find things out that they would rather us not find out. They don't want us to know how they approach things. They don't want us to know the relationships they had with Klamath water users and their attorney, Paul Simmons, and with Greg Paddington and with Dan Keppen, who was named Man of the Year. I'm still trying to figure out why.
Man of the Year by what group?
I guess.
Or in what context?
Water users.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Well, he probably is their Man of the Year.
You know,
he used to work for the Bureau of Reclamation, which is awesome.
Right. He, you know, and they portray in the state agencies, like and the federal officials, like, you know, Mr. John Bezdek and the state official like Charlton Bonham and Richard Whitman. They're all out there portraying these agreements as providing certain benefits, but they haven't proven the benefits. They wish to ignore the costs, so they get people, they provide a narrative out there that they want people to hear. And it's our job is to defunct, you know, debunk these misstatements, misrepresentations, and false narratives. That's what we're out here to do, is to separate the myths from the facts. Debunk the falsities. And that's the worst thing that could happen to these players, because they've created all these fictions for so long that they don't even remember what they told people.
Well, I think it's great that you're helping these guys, and I think it's great that they're standing up, because I know the folks in Siskiyou County are up for the fight. They want to keep their dams, and they need the guys above the dams to stand up as well. And I know the congressional district here in Northern California is on board to try to help all these folks. And, you know, at the end of the day, the farmers should be able to grow things. People ought to be able to raise their cattle. They should be able to exercise their legal water rights. And I don't think any of those things is unreasonable.
One of the best things to happen would be if there is a cross-state alliance between the people in Siskiyou and the people in Klamath. That type of people alliance would be very difficult for the government to overcome. People power, we the people, matter.
Yep. Absolutely. So if you're not involved in it directly, be a supporter at least. Thanks a lot, Larry. Hope you have an awesome day today, and we really appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Thank you both. I appreciate it. Thank you for your kind words.
Thanks a lot. And you're killing me, Larry, but just for fun. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week.